G'day, I'm Jason Weber, and this is Darren Burgess, and welcome to Two Coaches and a Coffee. We've got a slightly different venue today. Darren's reclining on his lounge, kicking back. I'm hard at work, as usual. But, Burger, there's been a bit of action in the AFL in the last, let's say, the last sort of 14 days. A whole bunch of injuries have come about. What's your take, mate? Let the world know what's going on, given that everybody's not AFL-centric.
Yeah, I guess what people who listen overseas or watch overseas might not realise is the scrutiny that comes under AFL clubs, coaches, high-performance staff, around and players, certainly, around performance. And we're five rounds into the season. And because there's more journos than players, believe it or not, in the AFL, which those overseas would struggle to comprehend. We might have mentioned that before, but so everything is under scrutiny. So it really makes everybody accountable, but often unjustly so. So at the moment, there's a couple of clubs that are going through so-called injury crisis, and you have to publish accurate injury data, which you do in some other leagues as well. So there's a lot of commentary both from media and, you know, social media on clubs who are currently got, you know, reasonable injury rates. And we've all been there. We've all been in those positions. And I've no doubt I'll be in those positions again, whether it's this year or next year, where you just go through a spate of injuries. But I think it's really unfair to pin it all on the high performance department team. Because as we know, and you've mentioned once or twice on this podcast before, there's just a whole gamut of reasons why injuries occur, most of which, by the way, we don't understand.
Many we don't. I agree.
Those are things that we can measure, and I don't want to get into that debate again because everybody who's listening to this podcast is, I'm certain, of the same mentality. They're all the same mentality of us that, you know, we can only measure a few things, so that doesn't mean that they're the causes of injury.
No.
But I think it's just really interesting that high performance teams are copying it a bit at the moment, and it's not always their fault. Sometimes it can be. I've certainly made mistakes in the past, and probably
will continue to make them.
But it's just, yeah, there's been a lot of, I'm talking mainstream media, even the AFL website, where are saying, you know, Darren Bird is under pressure or Jason Weber under pressure because of your injuries at, you know, wherever. It's interesting. What's your thoughts? You've been through it.
Mate, it's worthwhile from the experience perspective for listeners to understand. So my contract ended with Fremantle Football Club in 2020. And basically it was dragged out, and clearly we went through the whole COVID thing, but basically I just wasn't re-signed. But I got thrown under the bus that all the injuries were my fault. But in fact, we had one soft tissue injury, and all the other injuries were ankles, syndesmosis, collision. I got blamed for one kid who was jumping ludicrously on a bag. In AFL, you can practice jumping up onto people's backs, and he'd come off the bag and blew his ankle up and couldn't play. But apparently that was my fault. Now, that's Darren's thing. Like, we get hauled out in the media because you're the high-performance guy, which, as many would know, is a name I hate for our role. But what's really interesting, like, given, like, there's at least two teams in the AFL that are in soft tissue threat, like, they've got a lot of injuries, hamstrings and quads are the predominant. I'm going to throw it back a little bit on the coaches because, like, there's a lot we can do. Like, we can measure and we can intervene in a lot of areas. But at the end of the day, if you look at the most high value component, that is training, right? People can go overboard in games, and yes, we've got to condition them for worst case. But yeah. I was at a presentation in the US in January at a conference, and there was a guy working in the NFL. A guy I know quite well, he was talking about his experiences meeting coaches across the world. And he spoke about one coach in particular with whom I have a lot of experience. But he was talking about the implementation of tactical periodization and how important it is and how this guy was an expert. And I'm going to tell you this without a shadow of a doubt, and I'm happy to bring out the proof at any point, but this coach, as good as he was, set a plan, but then on the field made decisions to go so far past the point that he'd had set that players got injured. Now, that wasn't my fault. That wasn't anybody's fault other than the coach going too far. Now, in 20, nearly 30 years, I've seen this over and over again. We set a plan, whether the coach sets it or we came to it collaboratively, however it happened. But the coach goes, you know what? I'm not happy with this, or I'm getting emotional because it's an emotional part of the year. We're going this far. And while you might sustain it for 1 week or 2 weeks, again, I've got plenty of data to suggest that much like what has been published, you get to 3 and 4 weeks of this, we're talking 15, 20% overboard, and pop, 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 sequence goes. So it's really interesting, and it'd be something that I'd love to hear coaches talk about is they go, oh, it was the captain's call. That's a big one in Australia. It was captain's call, or it's my executive decision. Well, yeah, it is your executive decision. But, and I'm more than happy if you get fired for it, but unfortunately, there are other staff members that do cop it quite regularly.
And I mean, that's not even to make comment on what players are doing away from the
That's true.
3 to 5 hours that we might get them a day. So, but yeah, it's just an interesting narrative, and it makes stories, and it can work for you if you, as you know, if you win a last quarter and you might win a few in a row, and so suddenly
Yeah.
start
You're the
talking about.
fitness guru.
Yeah, when there's a whole range of things that contribute to that as well. So it can work for you, but it certainly can work against you, and it's doing that at the moment. I guess what it's a bit like for the people listening over in Europe, the Premier League, when they change a manager in any division, doesn't have to be Premier League, and the manager, first thing they come in and do is put players through a rigorous training session that would exhaust the fittest players on the planet, but they deliberately make it hard, and then they go, oh, look, they're not fit. Look at them, look at them. They're all haunched over, they're all breathing heavily, they're not fit. And that's a great narrative to be able to sell. That means buy me some more time, give me some more time, because the previous manager had no idea what they were doing.
Course they didn't. Of course
So
they didn't.
it's an interesting one, but how you navigate that. And having been through it, I remember at a previous club, we had 3 hamstrings in 2 days for 3 incredibly important players. And I was straight, despite 3 years of impeccable injury record, the following Wednesday night, I was straight before the board. And,
Oh.
so what that does is it means that, it rams home the temporary nature of your position and the sort of lack of trust. It also rams home the accountability, which is okay, and that's something we all sign up for.
Yep.
But the really the thing that I learned during that process was stick to your process. And if as long as you obviously, if it repeats a lot, then you might have a few issues. But if you can control what you can control in your environment, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again on this podcast, have the mindset of what happens if, what would it look like if I came and audited this club?
Always agree.
If I came and audited my
Agree.
performance team, what would it look like? Are we ticking off all of the, research, evidence-based factors that might contribute that we know about? Tick, 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 tick. Okay, we're good.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Two Coaches and a Coffee is proudly sponsored by SpeedSig. If you work with field sport athletes, understanding how your players generate and control speed is critical to your effectiveness as a coach, medical practitioner, or sports scientist. Acceleration, speed, and deceleration not only can be generated using unique individual strategies, but those strategies change as an athlete gets stronger, as they develop better skills, most definitely when they suffer injuries, and as the athlete gets older. Does your athlete monitoring program cover these variables? SpeedSig uses IMU GPS technology that your team is already using to provide biomechanically validated and reliable data that describes how an athlete generates and controls speed. Check out our website for more detail at speedsig.com. Now back to two coaches and a coffee. 100%. I couldn't agree more, mate. I'm the same. I always look at my environment from a third person perspective. Yeah. If I was reviewing this, what would people say? And in fact, over time, you know how you're in a performance environment and you get people visit. So I would have people visit when I was back in the AFL. And I would say, okay, you can come, but you've got to pay. And your payment is, you can come, you can have a look around, I'll show you everything. But at the end of it, you've got to review it to me.
Yeah, nice.
And you've got to come and say what you liked, what you didn't like. Now, I got to take it on back, but it's feedback, right? It's an external review you get for free. And I think that's a valuable, I found that extremely valuable. And there's a few guys who I'm now still quite good friends with who couldn't believe that I was saying, I want you to review me, review okay. what I do, review my stuff, review everything. And they were shocked. And I said, well, it's not a humility piece, but it's a practicality. Like if you assume that you know everything, then you're screwed. But if you assume that, okay, I'm doing a good job and it's okay, but what can I improve on? You maybe can't see the forest through the trees.
And I think that happens when you're involved in within a culture. Mm. So you're just involved in you know, your AFL club and say, yeah. No, it's the coach's fault. No, it's this fault. And you don't have a chance to.
I'm going to steer this another way a little bit. Like you quite often talk about, you know, maintaining process, which I couldn't agree with more. I think it's fantastic. But clearly with the speed sick thing, I've quite often spoken about the need to try and investigate other things, try and figure out what we don't know. Now, here's just a little horror story, right? And this isn't a solution, but maybe it's something for people who are in the gig anywhere to be aware of. So you talked about what players do. So I had a player who was extremely important, high value player, who had a string of injuries. Now, the string of those injuries dated back to an injury that he had before he even got drafted into AFL. So it was like this, had this cork, hematoma in his thigh that had calcified by the time he was 16. So he comes to the AFL and he got an innocuous scan on his groin early in his career and we found this thing. And he was like, this body. Anyway, for 10 years, nothing went wrong. But then he has a knee injury and the knee injury unravels. And so this calcification becomes an issue. Anyway, long story. But this kid at one point has this calf injury, this low grade. So we're rehabbing it, going through all the process, and everyone's on, like my staff were on exactly what reps, what distances, everything was calculated. We were looking at the structure of days. Anyway, the kid finishes training on like a Wednesday, no problem. Has Thursday off, and he's coming back Friday. So we're all planned up. Yep, we're going to go again. We're getting ready to play. Comes back in on the Friday. We expect Friday, so we had a lower intensity day on the Wednesday. Friday was going to be up. He comes back in and he's, 15, 20 minutes into the session, I can feel my calf. Anyway, shit hits the fan, done. Scan, it's gone again. Low grade. And we're like pulling our hair out. And I've got no hair to pull anyway, right? But we're pulling our hair out. Anyway, long story short, the kid's done the right thing. He's had the day off. He's gone and tried to do some recovery stuff, but he's decided that he would go boogie board surfing. So in Australia, like in America as well, but you get the short board, but on your back, on your legs, you've got flippers. And so you're kicking. And so we're digging into this and the coach was into me. What have you done? What have you done? You've created this, you can't do your job. And I'm like, man, what? We've measured everything. Anyway, you start quizzing the athlete and the athlete goes, oh, yeah, I went for a surf. I'm like, okay. And so I'm thinking, because I grew up stand-up surfing. Yeah, that doesn't seem like much, but yeah, oh, no, boogie board. Right. And did you wear flippers? Yes. How long were you out for? Oh, 2.5 hours. When was the last time you did that? Oh, I haven't done it for maybe a year. And I'm like, righto. So we have a calf that's already on the edge. We're allowing it 48 hours to recover. In that time, he does something that loads the calves up quite a bit. He comes in and does that. Now, I reported it back to the hierarchy. Didn't matter. That's ridiculous. You're drawing. And I'm like, how else explain it, mate? Like, the kid was fine. Everything was going great. So that's a horror story about stuff you can't control, and you're never going to be able to control everything they do. Not at all.
Yeah. No, it's it's something that you can't factor in, and you're just hoping, and you go through education.
Oh, mate.
But by the same token, and we've spoken about this before, I don't want to stop people from going surfing or anything like that. But when you've got a highly sort of high risk athlete.
Neither do I, but it's interesting, mate. The reality probably is of that athlete at that time was that he was so far down the path of he'd had this issue, then that issue, and training volumes had got smaller and smaller. I don't think it was something we were ever going to recover, but that's just what happens. Mate, just while we've had a crack at that injury thing, but with respect to, you know, we've said two AFL teams are struggling with soft tissue. My quick question to you about is game speed. Has the game changed this year? What are you doing to have a look at that?
Yeah, we just look at the player speeds, and you know, from GPS and just going through that, it doesn't look like it has massively compared to the last sort of 4 or 5 years of data. What I suspect will happen though is what I suspect is happening is you're going from defense to offense quicker. I think whilst the game speed as an average speed hasn't changed, the explosiveness has. So the sprinting volumes has probably gone up or has likely gone up. So I suspect what that means is the real emphasis within AFL is that transition, is how quickly you can get a turnover and attack the opposition, as it is in a lot of sports. But it probably hasn't been as influential or as critical in AFL as what it has in some other sports. So your ability to go at an opposition when they've got the ball, when they're least prepared to defend, is massive. So I think that that's probably where there's been a lot of reacting to high speed, you know, high velocity running that hasn't been there before. That'd be my best guess, 5, 6 rounds in.
Mate, did you see in your time in the EPL and any experiences with people in the EPL at the moment, does EPL change much?
Yeah, it does. It's changed massively, and there's some decent research around around that. But certainly the average and max velocity bands or high velocity bands has gone up remarkably in the last 4 or 5 years, let alone the last 15, 20.
Mate, it's interesting talking to college football guys in the US and talking about the number of reps that they're doing in offense. That's one thing. They clearly have a defensive metric for the same thing. But just looking at the number of reps, and that some teams that are playing up-tempo offenses that are really dictating, hey, we're going to try and do more reps, force the defense to do more and get things moving faster. But it is a remarkable thing, and maybe something people should be constantly evaluating is not just your environment, but making sure you're seeing the trends of the game. We're hopefully in the next couple of weeks, I'll be publishing with one of my former PhD students some trends that we got in the AFL using different AI technology to build them out. But I think we've talked before about staffing and what do your staff do and where's your vision. I think from that high performance manager's perspective, I think the ability to sit back a little bit, and this is what staff allows you to sit back and be able to look at the minutiae, the trees within your team, but then sit back and look at the forest and see what else is happening in the game is critical. Yeah. And then I guess it brings me to the point is what staff have you got? To be able to help you do that.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. And I'll finish on this because I want your advice on it, really.
if I can.
Past, Yeah, I was having a conversation yesterday with someone around how many times I've kind of had to go into a place and reorganize staff or reshuffle staff. And it's that good person versus good skills debate. And by that, I mean, okay, you've got a really talented strength coach, let's say. Or let's use sports scientists. You've got a head of sports scientists who head of sports science is really good, talented, and but you've got a junior in there who is we've spoken about the ability to code and the ability to see a little bit of a bigger picture in that space. But you want to, the head of sports science is a really good person, so you want to keep him around. He's got some skill set in the gym. Can you? But you really want to promote that young person up. Can you reshuffle them into a different position? Or is it better just to promote that person who's eager and keen and, you know, I like to think that you keep good people around. That would be my way of doing it, but
It's interesting, mate. I've got a young coach I mentor, and I was working with him this morning, and it's smart cat. But anyway, he was asking me about staff, and I said, I have a very clear picture in my head. Like, so I talk about models or all the time. Like, you've got to have a framework, principles. I did a podcast on it the other day when you were away. I did a podcast on this to try and fill the gap. But I think it's like episode, this must be episode 10. It was probably episode 7 or 8.
yeah.
Anyway, so my principle around department is I have an idea of what I want, of the people I want in it, subject to volume. So if I've got an idea for like a staff that had 10 in it versus 8 versus 6 versus 3, what would you do? Who would you pick? I think without question, the number one is that every executive leadership book talks about you've got to have the right people, no question. That being said, I'm going to say something a little bit horrible. Some people might say it, but I'm going to say it anyway, right? I often think of different professional people as mechanisms, right? So what mechanism do you fit in the machine that makes this whole thing work? So what is your role? Now, some people, I've had coaches work for me who were very skilled in one specific area, but not much else. But I brought them on anyway because they did that. And they did that thing so well that I made allowances in our model, in our system for all the other bits and pieces because that gave us an advantage. What I valued that advantage. Now I have other staff members. Let's say in my last 15 years, I've probably had three guys work with me who were, I've mentioned them before on this podcast, but three guys work with me who were unbelievable all-rounders. And they were just rock solid. They did development, they did rehab, they ran senior positions. So I think you've got to mix it up. Now, when it comes to sports scientist, I've got a real bent. Because I think if you're going to wear the sports science badge, you've got to bring some firepower. I cannot rationalize sports scientists who download GPS data and that's really all they do. Like, I'm looking for people who can really start to define pictures. So the guy who we're going to publish with soon about the AFL patterns, he did his PhD with me. But when he came in, he was really awkward. He was really quiet. He didn't fit too well, but we nurtured him. I nurtured him personally and got him through, and he was great, fantastic, but very, very smart, but very, very analytical. He was actually a very good running coach. He just wasn't very good in the environment. But we nurtured him through the environment and got him in and protected him at different points. But I think the point is you've got to define, A, is this person going to complement the skill set you need? What do they bring? But they've got to be good people. They can be quiet people. They can be, I've got a sports science, a genuine PhD in biomechanics from one of the big tech universities in Germany. When she came and worked with me, she didn't speak to anybody. She was so quiet. But you nurture along, and turns out she's a 400, former 400 meter sprinter. So she really understands running and and ran at a high level, now is an elite bike rider, but brilliant. But sometimes it takes, you've got to see potential in people, and you've got to see, I think, my opinion, you've got to look for some skills that go beyond what you've already got. I think generous, like I'm a generalist, mate. I am a generalist. I've worked with some great generalists. But I think then as a leader, though, if you can look for people that can ratchet up and turn up a notch, who can look at game styles, who can, mate, we were pulling data. So one of the keys, I think, in, let's say in AFL, is you can understand yourself, but understand the opposition. Sun Tzu, the art of war. Know thyself, know thy enemy. Win 1,000 battles, right? So we model, I was able, like what we're going to publish, our AI paper, was about detecting and quantifying opposition team running based on what was published publicly.
Yeah, okay.
But I couldn't have done that. I knew what we were trying to do and I had the idea, but my sports scientist, who was a genuine gun, did his normal GPS work, but on the side, we built this AI system that could detect other teams and build patterns. So I knew game to game what the opposition ran versus us.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that we've brought in a honors student who has got no domain knowledge whatsoever. But she's been able to do some things that I've not seen because she comes straight from a mathematics data. The ability to combine the two, I think is pretty important. And that's where it's heading. So it's just up to more general, traditionally educated sports scientists to upskill themselves, isn't it, really?
Correct. But it's, again, if you're going to wear the scientist badge, I think you need to be bringing some firepower. I mean, if you had two roles and one of them is you're the GPS guy and you do all that, great.
Yeah.
But my scientist would be like a friend of ours named Brains. Like I want that person, girl or guy, to be looking at patterns and looking at other structures and coming to me and saying, hey, Jace, I've seen this thing. What do you think?
Yeah.
Because as the boss, you can't see everything. You can't. No. You're often manipulating people around. You're moving. You're working with the coaches. So having those cats is important.
Yeah, you've just got to be curious enough to explore it yourself and then come in and say, listen, I was just having a look last night and I saw this. What do you think? Or yesterday or, you know, all that. So
yeah, man.
I agree. It's just that technical versus character debate and
they're always got to have character, mate. You can't you cannot hire, like, I tell you what, mate, my SpeedSig's company values are honesty and creativity. That's it. So honesty states straight up, you got to be a real person.
Yeah.
You can't be I spoke to someone the other day, the same thing. No dick policy. You can't be you can't work with dicks. Like, you got to work with people that genuinely every day you're going to enjoy coming to work and spend time with them, because we spend more of our life at work than we do anywhere else. Big truck going by.
Yeah, 100%.
So you got to work with good people. Anyway, mate, listen, I know you are pressed for time and our day is rapidly dwindling. So, man, I appreciate your time. We need to, next one out, we're probably going to do another coffee review. We're a bit behind on that.
So, yeah, actually, I've just transformed or transferred to a new coffee. So let's do it. I look forward to it.
All right, mate. Great chatting, and we will speak real soon again.
Chat, mate.